So tonight, we're evaluating the elections in South Africa and the way ahead. It's a Reformation Society subject, but it's also very much Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism, the news that's not reported. How do we evaluate the elections and the way ahead? What actually happened behind the scenes in the run-up to South Africa's 2019 elections? Well, of course, they make a big song and dance about it, and they like to talk about, you know, the people vote and X here and all the rest of it. The Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa, the IEC, which isn't that independent because they're appointed by, let's face it, Marxist ANC mafia, but they announced on the 20th of March 2019 that a record number of parties, 48 political parties, had registered candidates for the national parliamentary election. This is 19 more parties than contested the 2014 elections. So that sounds healthy, that you got more parties. Some of the parties opted only to contest in provincial elections, for example, like the Cape Party. So here's the stats. The date was the 8th of May, as we know. They contested for 400 seats in the National Assembly. So the percentages are what determines it. You've got 400 seats. So if you get a quarter of a percent of the vote, you get one seat. You get 1% of the vote, you get four seats, and so on. So 400 seats, 48 contesting parties, 26,000 registered voters. Now, we've got 59 million population. So where's the rest of people? Well, they say, well, we've got 74% of the eligible population that could have registered who are registered. But of them, only a certain percentage, in this case, in the 60%, voted. So, in fact, more people are eligible to vote than actually do vote. That's interesting. 22,000 polling stations. And the IEC was very, very proud to announce that most polling stations are open by 11 a.m. Now, bearing in mind that the election was meant to start at 7 a.m. And they said, and there were only a few stations not open yet at 5 p.m. Just five political polling stations hadn't yet opened by 5 p.m. What it meant to open. And they thought that was good. And they were, the IEC must be the most self-congratulating bunch next to the Muslims. They're always blowing their own trumpets, sounding their own, patting themselves back. What a good job they did. And the Bible says, let another praise you, not your own mouth. But they printed over 50 million ballots, considering we only had 26,000 voters. But a sorry? For 26 million voters, they printed 50 million ballot papers. I mean, let's face it, there's the ones you use and there's the ones they might use to substitute for yours. But anyway, whatever it is, they then claimed that in the last elections, 2014, 73% of the registered voters actually turned out to vote. This time, much less. It was in the 60%. Well, I'm sure you all got sick of all the posters on the lampposts all over the place. And they spent 2 billion rand on advertising for this election. 2 billion, that's billion with a B. And of that, more than 1 billion was spent by the ANC. So when you've got some parties that are run entirely by volunteers with no budget, and then you've got other parties that vote for themselves, money from our tax money, for their electoral campaigns. The ANC and the DA, as the official party and as the official opposition, vote themselves hundreds of millions of rands of our taxpayers' money for themselves, while they require the new parties to pay deposits which they will lose, forfeit, if they don't get a seat, for example. According to Russia Today, RT, as it re-elects hopeless ANC again, do we finally admit that post-apartheid South Africa has failed? That's the headline. Russia Today says the ANC has yet again won a majority in South Africa's general election despite its disastrous record, killing hope that the country will turn in the right direction. And the West must stop pretending that this is just a glitch. What is wrong with the country that went to the polls to vote for a new National Assembly goes well beyond the hard facts, unedifying as those are. Still quoting from Russia Today, it's not just that half the population lives in absolute poverty, that more than a quarter of the adults are unemployed. Nor is it the economic growth rate that has stagnated at below 2% average for a decade. In fact, 0.8% this last year. 0.8%. So that's less than 1%. Even as the rest of the world recovered from the global crisis, all the regular blackouts, which you're not allowed to call blackouts or power failures. They are load shedding. Try and find that in Webster's Dictionary. But anyway, they blackouts and power failures, even if you want to recall them load shedding. Well, the ANC did some vote shedding this time. The violent crime rates, or that 1 in 5 adults is infected with HIV. 1 in 5. 20% officially. So Russia Today still quoting, the story since 1994 is of a country being given a historic chance to show the way to prosperity and democracy for Africa and failing. Exactly as the pessimists predicted. Now, this is a quote from Russia, who, remember, the previous Russian government, the Soviet Union, was sponsoring and training and supporting and arming the ANC. So this is a real vote of no confidence in them. This creep, Rolf Meyer, was National Party General Secretary, the opposite number to Cyril Ramaphosa in negotiations, head of our negotiation team. He was once even, embarrassing as it is to say, Minister of Defense. Oh, can you believe it? He replaced Magnus Malone, who was a general who'd actually won battles. And this chap was the canary who sang in the choir. I mean, that's all he did in the army. He never heard a shot fired in anger. And so this character who represented South Africa at the negotiation table, he says, I vote ANC for a better life. Life. A better life for all. Yeah, a better lie. Anyway, so interesting that Rolf Meyer, who represented the National Party in elections, he votes ANC 25 years later. Well, personally, I don't think people change their opinions that much. I think he's a traitor, a Volksfreund from the beginning, personally. By the way, just on the list of Rolf Meyer's accomplishments, he's the one who hired a witch doctor to design the new corporate image for the ANC and for the National Party. And they came up with the scrambled eggs, and he hired witch doctors to dedicate the National Party's new offices in Soweto before the 1994 elections. They sacrificed some goats, sprinkled entrails and all that sort of goat's blood over them. What does it take to get excommunicated from a reformed church? Honestly, apparently that wasn't enough. They got all excited about Grow South Africa. I don't know what they're growing except corruption. And they should take the F away. Just make it a better life for all. Of course, Zuma's slogan was, together, working together, we can do so much more crime and corruption and everything else. Now, we've got a billionaire president. America's also got a billionaire president. America's billionaire president reduces taxes. Our billionaire president increased taxes on everyone, especially the poor with increasing VAT. First thing he did. America under billionaire President Trump has the lowest unemployment in 40 years. We've got the highest unemployment in 40 years. By the way, they say we've got 26% unemployment, but then we've got a whole lot of economically inactive and discouraged work seekers, which add up to about 56% in total. So when they say we've got 26% unemployment, but they've now taken unemployment into three categories: unemployed, discouraged work seekers, and economically inactive, all of which I think is unemployed. But no. Strict immigration control in America, no borders over here, effectively open African borders, he's calling for. Consumer confidence in the US is at an all-time high. Consumer confidence in South Africa at an all-time low. Economic growth in America, serious economic growth in America. Didn't they hit 4% and so on? Yeah, and we are at such an all-time low. Our last year's been under 1%. Economic decline in South Africa, economic growth in America. Seems they've got a better billionaire president than we do. He's revamped medical services. Our medical services are totally failed. They've got declining violent crime rates. We've got increasing violent crime rates. They have zero violent demonstrations. We have daily violent demonstrations. So, I don't know. If we could trade our billionaire presidents, I would. But do you remember when Cyril the squirrel came in? You had these Hail King squirrels, so the confused whites, they are the Stockholm Syndrome characters. The brainwashed populace and the South African media were all hailing old Cyril. What a wonderful person, what a great thing. And what has he done in the last 14 months, by the way? 15 months, is it? Do you remember that back in Zuma's years, Zuma took his vice president, Cyril Ramaphosa, and put him in charge of Eskom to fix the Eskom mess. Remember that, 2014? So Eskom is, in fact, Cyril's baby. And Eskom, since the year 2000, has had one single engineer as a CEO, and it shows. Used to always have engineers as CEOs of Eskom, but now you don't, and it's so corrupt, so inefficient, so chaotic. But we'll get to that just now. So somebody said, Cyril might be the head of the party, but Julius is the head of policy. Because he's the one who proposed at Cyril's first day in parliament this expropriation without compensation, and Cyril and the entire ANC bunch voted for the expropriation without compensation bill proposed by Julius Malema, the disgraced traitor, deserter, ex-ANC youth leader who had criminal charges for corruption, all sorts of things after him. And to think, would the ANC vote for a bill proposed by a deserter, a traitor, a failed leader of the youth league who deserted him and is taking votes away, meant to be the enemy, the competition? I'm convinced it's a deception operation. The EFF is an integral part of the ANC. They're just the vanguard of the revolution with a bit of plausible deniability. So the EFF, interestingly enough, was the most active, visible party, having the biggest rallies, the biggest everything. You would have sworn they would have gotten the biggest votes. So how come they weren't able to get much more than 10% despite having vast amount of funds and vast amount of activity? It shows that, well, maybe a lot of their supporters are too young, or maybe a lot of their supporters are illegal aliens and aren't eligible to vote. But whatever it is, they didn't perform anything near as well at the polls as what you would have thought with the amount of media coverage you got, the amount of posters, advertising, and especially the rallies. Who else filled football stadiums like they did? But then again, when you don't know which way is up for your poster, then maybe they don't know what's right or wrong either. So whoever put this picture on this poll was not thinking. Forward to United Socialist South Africa, free of oppression, economic exploitation. Whoever's written this is an imbecile, because it's socialism that provides more oppression and economic exploitation than any other system ever known to man. Do you know, the thing that's so astounding is time and again, the way the press has described the issue, and I'm afraid some pastors too. The ANC hasn't done enough, they say. What do you mean haven't done enough? Everything they do is criminal. It's like somebody saying in the army, writing back home, all the food we get is poison and we don't get enough. Well, it's contradictory. So how can you say the ANC is not doing enough? Everything they do is criminal. And so they haven't done enough to alleviate poverty. But everything they've done is increase poverty. They haven't done enough to alleviate unemployment. What do you mean? They've created the unemployment. And this is the thing that if the EFF could understand, they are just dupes and cannon fodder for a revolution that despises them and is only going to make their life much, much, much worse. Proof? Well, every second phase of the revolution in all of history, we've got a whole newsletter on it, from Red China, Soviet Union, Ethiopia, Mengistu, Zimbabwe, Cuba. You don't have to go very far to see the examples that this doesn't work. When Mandela became president, 1994, unemployment in this country was 2 million, which was already horrific. But remember, we'd just come out of a war, sanctions, disinvestment. So a lot of that unemployment was a direct result of ANC policy anyway. It would get better now. The war's ended. Foreign aid's coming in. Investment's coming in. No more sanctions. No more conscription. I mean, how easy would it be? Superpower of Africa, phenomenally good economy. The rand, about 2 rand to the dollar. Before sanctioned disinvestment, the rand was stronger than dollar. But anyway, the first time I went to America and Britain overseas, I was able to get more dollars and pounds back than I put down rand, because the rand was stronger. And now it's what, 15 rand to the dollar? 19 to 22 rand to the pound? Now, how is for every year the ANC's been in power, the rand's gone down. Not only that, unemployment's gone up. They've added 1 million unemployed to every year they've been in power. They've been in power 25 years. We now have 30 million unemployed in the country. 30 million, if you add discouraged work seekers and economically inactive. So the ANC inherited 2 million unemployed and have added 28 million more unemployed. So what do you mean ANC's not done enough? Everything they've done has been to create the problem. And so the way people put, they haven't done enough to improve this. They've created the problems. If they could have just kept the country at the level it was when they inherited it, which, how difficult is that? You don't have sanctions, you don't have disinvestment, you don't have war, you don't have conscription, you're getting in foreign investment, you're getting foreign aid. How difficult would it be to just maintain? But no, they had to destroy everything. The key element to understand here is the African National Congress is controlled by the Southern Communist Party. The Southern Communist Party, the ANC and COSATU, are part of what they call a tripartite alliance. The tripartite alliance, the Southern Communist Party provides the brains. The ANC provides the mass action, violence, intimidation, and so on. COSATU is the muscle. Okay, they're the trade unions. But basically speaking, proof. Go onto the South African SAVotersGuide.org website. And on the SA Voters Guide website, you can click on the icon of each political party and go straight to their party. So you click on the ANC, and you get straight to the African National Congress's website. And if it's up, as most times it seems to be down, ANC website's got a link to the Southern Communist Party. Go onto the Southern Communist Party website, and what do you find? Well, you can buy Lenin baseball caps, Lenin t-shirts, Lenin ballpoint pens, mugs, and so on, credit cards accepted. But you also see the Southern Communist Party is not putting up a candidate in upcoming elections, but advise all cadres to vote for the ANC candidate. Interesting. Then you see, oh, wait a minute, there's a link to the Communist Party USA. You go to the Communist Party USA, and what do I find? Lenin baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, and all that sort of thing, and Visa credit cards accepted, MasterCard. But aside from all that, Communist Party USA is not putting a candidate up in the next election, but advise all cadres to vote for the Democratic Party candidate. What does this tell you? They own them. They control them. Every ANC leader, president, since 1994, including Nelson Mandela, has been a senior member of the Politburo of the Communist Party. So basically, the ANC is a veneer, and the Communist Party runs the show. So if you're wanting to know why things are bad in South Africa, it's not that the ANC's failed. The ANC is succeeding to do what the Communist Party wants them to do. And yes, this is ANC leader with his, that's SACP, Southern Communist Party, black star, five-pointed star with a yellow hammer and sickle on a red shirt. That is the Southern Communist Party shirt. Communist strategy includes abolish private property by property taxes, heavy progressive income tax, abolish rights of inheritance, death taxes and so on, confiscate property rights, try not paying your rates and taxes, see who owns your land. Central bank, they steal more from you than even more than taxes do. Government ownership of communication transportation, think Transnet, Telkom. Government ownership of factories and agriculture, yep, land expropriation, Eskom and so on. Government control of labor, COSATU and so on. And also, remember, you've got to fit in BBBEE, affirmative action, racial quotas in your job requirements. And you know what our colored friends in the Cape tell us? Every government, everything in the Western Cape has a quota. They can only hire one colored out of every 11. Now, the coloreds might be the largest single population group in the Western Cape, but they've taken a national quota and said, you can only get less than one-tenth of the jobs in a government agency, which is why they keep busing in people from Transkei and elsewhere into the Cape. And so the colored people in Cape said, well, where are we meant to go for our jobs? I said, move to another part of the country. You got to leave your family and your homes and everything else. And this is ridiculous. Of course, corporate farms, regional planning, free, read compulsory education for all children, public schools, read government schools, combination of education with industrial production, indoctrination, gulags. How far have we gone? Well, Saul Alinsky, who is a complete and utter communist, he said the 8 levels of control. You've got to control healthcare. Control healthcare, you control the people. What would you prefer if money was no object? State hospital or private hospital? Poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control. Is the government failing to do enough for the poor people? No, they're succeeding in making more poverty and making more unemployment because that's the goal. If you want a communist country, increase control how? Make people more and more and more poverty stricken. In Eastern Europe, they said, you're hungry, you're scared, and you're quiet. You spend 35 hours a week in queues in Eastern Europe. That's how it was under communism. That's their goal. Debt. Increase debt to an unsustainable level. Increase taxes. Produce more poverty. Why did we increase? If we wanted to decrease unemployment, increase employment, and increase poverty, you know what you'd do? What Singapore and Hong Kong does. Abolish taxes. Make a tax haven. You get so much economy in there. Do you know the only reason why Red China's economy looks as good as it does? It's because they absorbed Hong Kong. Hong Kong had a bigger economy than the whole of Red China before 1997. But now, of course, Hong Kong's economy is included in China's stats. So China looks like, boy, is China booming. But it's Hong Kong that's booming. Why? Because no taxes. Tax haven creates unemployment. If this government really cared about the poor and wanted to increase their quality of life, they would remove taxes or lower them to the lowest possible level, and that would increase employment, quality of life, standard of living, and all this. It's so obvious. And so to think that the people up there really believe what they say, I don't think they're that stupid. I think they know that everything they say is a lie, and it's going to make life worse for the people that they're promising better. They say we're going to remove economic exploitation. Exact opposite in mind. Of course, gun control, because you don't want people to be able to defend themselves. Criminals like unarmed victims, and governments prefer unarmed population. Welfare, take control of food, housing, income. You can control the people. People need to remember this expropriation without compensation doesn't mean taking the ownership of this farm from this productive white farm and giving it to a productive black farmer. It means the government owns the land and you become a tenant and you pay rent to the state. And they can kick you out anytime they want because they own the land. That's the goal. EFF's not asking about changing ownership to other farmers of another race. They're talking about the government owns all land. That's the goal. Education, of course. We've got indoctrination gulags, not real education in state schools. Religion, of course. Well, of course, they've got to remove Bible-believing evangelical Christianity and replace with a kind of interfaith, secularized thing. Class warfare, very important. Create division. Any of this sound familiar? Useful idiots support this. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. All these people here are just talking heads for communism. They're ventriloquist dummies for the communist New World Order crowd, the banksters and others who are using them for ends that these people must know are going to result in more poverty for the people. Just like in Zimbabwe, more than half the population are to flee. People live on food handouts. They can't support their own people. They can't survive. That's the end goal of all of this. And I don't believe these people are stupid. I believe these people are just evil. And what's the difference between the EFF, the ANC, and the DA? Trick question. Because we've got all sorts of parties out there. We've got the Copeless Party, which is a breakaway from the ANC. UDM, which is another breakaway from the ANC. The IFP, which is a genuine Zulu nationalist group. Then the NFP, which is a breakaway from the IFP. You've got a ZAPU, which is a breakaway from the Pan-African Congress. Agung SA have no idea where they stand and what they're doing. They're just out there. You've got African Independent Congress, the APC, the African Transformation Movement, which I'm told is complete fraud set up by the ANC as for an opposition for those people to go to who are religious and have objections to the ANC. But this is actually just a front set up by them, I'm informed. The New South Africa Party, know nothing about them. Residents Association of South Africa, who knows? Then you get the Dacha Party. You kind of wonder what their policies are. And the ADEC, which has a partnership with the Dacha Party, African Democratic Change. Sankota, who knows? DLC, and then you get Auntie Pat of the Good for Nothing Party. Now, the Good for Nothing Party started out in the Pan-African Congress. Now, in the PAC, she was the leader of the PAC at the time of the St. James Massacre. 1993, the month after the St. James Massacre, Auntie Pat was walking with the leaders of the PAC down Lansdowne Road to the Claremont Police Station to demand the release of Kai McCormack. Did I give his name right? Kai McCormack. And they were chanting, as they were going in, she is part of the leadership, chanting, one church, one bomb, one minister, one bullet. Of course, one settler, one bullet, kill the farmer, kill the boer, but one church, one bomb, and one minister, one bullet was part of the slogan, and Auntie Pat was part of that. Then she started the Independent Democrats. Then she morphed into DA. Isn't it funny? Not one of these women is involved in the DA leadership anymore, but they were all there at one time. In fact, gee, what happened to all of these people? There's only Muzi here. The other three, gone. So the DA is kind of like imploding. No jobs, no dignity. No jokes. This person doesn't even know how to hold a sign up. Right? But their policies chase away jobs, close down jobs, and increase unemployment. The DA is almost as socialist as the ANC. And, of course, you've got the Good for Nothing Party. Auntie Pat, I ask you. In my family, we call her Cruella de Vil. Then you get the DA. Boy, has the DA got some good slogans. The ANC has killed the lights, affecting 57 million South Africans. Time for us to take their power. Okay. Hasn't the DA been running the Cape for a long time? So why do we have power failures in the Western Cape? This is pretty good. Our promise to South Africa, fight corruption. Isn't it wonderful to know there's no corruption in the Western Cape or anywhere where the DA is in charge? Honest professional police. Fair access to jobs. He supports BBEE, affirmative action, racial quotas, including only one colored per 11 employees in the government department in the Western Cape. Secure our borders. You've got to be kidding. Speed up basic service delivery. I like this one. A provincial police force for you. Well, that's a good program. It's not in their manifesto, but it was on their posters. Excellent. This is something we should hold their feet to the fire on. They've called for it. They've got a mandate. They've got 75% of people in Western Cape voted DA. Okay, where's our provincial police force? I think we should push for this. They also offered a provincial railway. So there's a whole lot of good things that the DA promised, like keeping the lights on. Aren't you glad to know? Now that they've got a 75% of the Western Cape vote, we're not going to have any power failures from now on. Let's hold them to it. We need a provincial police force. This is the kind of nonsense that's been going on the Cape, and how many, we had a whole presentation just on the fires. 75% of all the arson taking place in our country in the last 18 months is taking place in the Western Cape. Most of it in the Cape metropole. Why? We do need a provincial police force because the national police are not protecting us in the Cape. And we're paying four times more taxes than get spent in our province anyway. So let's call these characters to account and hold their feet to fire. Joy magazine had an article, as did, you know, they had Christian Consensus, which claimed that the DA was part of this Christian Consensus. And Joy had an article on how Musimani is a Christian, God-fearing, born-again, all this sort of thing, tongue-speaking. Then we read Psalm 50, verse 16 to 17. But to the wicked God says, what right have you to declare my statutes or to take my covenant in your mouth, seeing you hate instruction and cast my words behind you? You've got to see some of the Musimani interviews. This Christian, pastor, born again, tongue speaking. Where do you stand on abortion? Well, I'm pro-choice, and I believe it's so important that a woman has a right to choose what to do with her own body, and so on and so forth. And he basically, here's this Christian being pro-abortion. He just takes the words and twists them around, so on. How dare any Christians get together with Musimani and call himself a Christian Consensus for godly governance in South Africa? Godly governance? The DA is pro-perversion, pro-homosexuality. They are the ones who taunt the ANC in Parliament that they have more gay members and leaders in the DA than the ANC has. They are more pro-pornography, pro-perversion, and pro-abortion than even the ANC, if that seems possible. In no way is Musimani offering godly governance. I don't know what these people are thinking. I think they're brain dead when they suggested that the DA is part of a godly governance Christian consensus in this country. then you get all this kind of fear-mongering nonsense. DA fears setback in the Western Cape, and they sent out these leaflets, and you must have seen the leaflets. I was struggling to get one to scan, though, on don't waste your vote on the smaller parties. You know, and basically that the ANC and the EFF will get in if you don't vote for the DA, which is rubbish. Because when the DA didn't have a majority, they ruled Cape Town, the Western Cape, in alliance with the ACDP and the Freedom Front. And in fact, it was a pretty good alliance and it worked quite well. And once the DA got a majority, then they became ultra-pagan and just kicked out the others and to hell with the alliance partners because they didn't need them anymore. And the DA started to enact the most pagan policies in this Cape. So that they could lie like this. We have a proportional representation system. So you've got all these parties that we had to choose from. But basically it came down to the big three, DA, ANC, and EFF, or the DANC, EFF. And you could see how they were putting it. Okay, in the last election, 62% for the ANC, 22% for the DA, 6% for the EFF. But look at this picture. Is that Cyril Ramaphosa I see there? Is that Julius Malema, Winnie Mandela in the middle? I thought they were enemies. Isn't he the traitor, deserter, who's torn a vast amount of the ANC support base away? Does the body language here indicate hostility, suspicion, antagonism? Well, how about this one? Is that Musimani of the DA grinning and leaning inwards warmly towards Cyril Ramaphosa? Are they competition, enemies? DANC indeed. And wait a minute, is this the man who's been saying vote DA to keep the ANC and EFF out of the Western Cape? Do you get the impression they're lying to you, maybe? And yes, this is the kind of cartoons that have been put up there. You've got the ANC pup and gravy train, and the DA hot pot served lukewarm, and the EFF pie in the sky. Yep. Of course, there's the ACDP, which has made some horrible compromises in recent years, such as speak in Parliament, and I deal with that in the BBEE Affirmative Action article in the latest Gospel Defence League, how Sherrilyn Dudley, in Parliament, at the vote in 2013 for this broad-based black economic empowerment, affirmative action, racial quotas, it's unconstitutional, it's unworkable, it's unnecessary, and so on. However, despite our reservations, ACDP will support this motion. And then they want to accuse us of lying when we gave them a no for opposers BBEEE affirmative action racism in the voters guide. They voted for it, but they've changed their mind after supporting it for the last 20 years. But they hadn't changed their mind. In fact, they just redefined what affirmative action was. Still meant they support it, actually. They just want to call it something else. Then you get the Freedom Front Plus, who have been pretty consistent in standing up against the ANC, and they haven't had anyone walking across the floor. So because they were principled, anyone daring to express a different opinion finds himself a target of malicious slurs and smear tactics. Take, for example, this Philip Rosenthal, Christian View Network. VF Plus wants to persecute Christians. I kid you not. I had to get a screenshot of this because who can believe that? And this was shared all over social media the day before the elections. Christian View Network, Philip Rosenthal, agent of interest for Israel, obviously was told to target VF Plus because a lot of people who used to support ACDP were going to vote VF Plus because they're more consistent, especially on fighting against affirmative action and so on. And so this character put out VF Plus supports homosexual marriage, which is a complete lie. In fact, we know that that's not true. But anyway, they put all that, and this Philip Rosenthal, who we've known for 25 years as a character assassin, who spends his life attacking other people, and to attack a Christian party on the cusp of the election. I had people phoning me on the morning of the election saying, Peter, who do I vote for? I've heard now that the Freedom Front is supporting homosexual marriages and wants to persecute Christians. It's obviously disinformation, timed at the last minute so that there's not even time for the party to give a response. This is disgraceful. Good arguing deals with the central point. or finds mistakes and explains why they're mistaken in using quotes, or uses counter-argument, or states opposing case with little or no supporting evidence, or criticize the tone of the writing. When you start to attack the character of the person, of the writing, without addressing substance of the argument, or just name-calling, like, you're an idiot, you're a racist, you're, you know. So, unfortunately, most of the communications on social media and elections is at the bottom two or three rungs. They don't get down to central issues. Like, in sports, you play the ball, not the man. In other words, you're meant to kick the ball, not the other player. When you kick the other player, it's a foul. And in fact, in arguing and discussing, it should be a foul too. It's not acceptable. And so this kind of behavior of character assassins like Philip Rosenthal, it's criminal. And the amount of Christians though who shared this foolishly. I mean, people who should know better. And attacked us and our voters' guide for giving a good, on 8 objective issues that we ticked through, to the VF Plus when they support homosexual marriage and want to persecute Christians. Well, who could even believe junk like that? One of the clearest indicators you've got a mentally unstable person here is a smear campaign. Smear campaigners carefully, strategically use lies, exaggerations, suspicions, and false accusations to try to destroy your credibility. They hide behind a cloak of upstanding heroism, and they feign innocence in an attempt to make as many people as possible think their efforts are based not on their vindictiveness, but on upstanding concern. But when a person's got a ministry of criticism, like Philip Rosenthal, then honestly and truly, they should be written off. That is just fake news. Stabbing and shooting your own people in the back is not acceptable. In a time of war, you expect to be shot at by the enemy. You don't expect to be shot at in the back by your own side. In fact, Freedom Front Plus in the manifesto makes very clear where they stand. And they are an expressly Christian party. They're not for persecuting Christians. Of course, we also had the Cape Party provincially making a stand for independence and for the Western Cape not to be run by politicians, but by local communities. Ben Carson said in the last elections in America, we've been conditioned to think that only politicians can solve our problems. But at some point, maybe we'll wake up and recognize it was politicians who created our problems. The politicians create the problems and they say, vote for us to solve the problems. Wait a minute, you're the ones who created the problems. That's why maybe we don't have a political solution to our problems. Well, more than maybe. We need to get the politicians out of the job and start putting local community people in. Like when I grew up, town councillors didn't get paid. Members of parliament didn't get paid. My school teacher was a member of parliament in Rhodesia. He said, well, of course we need a real job. The idea that you go into politics to get rich, well, at whose expense? You get the very wrong kind of people. We should go back to a situation where the local municipality runs itself and maybe we could have one or two full-time employees, but the actual councillors and so on, they should be people who donate their time because they're civic-minded and they're successful in their business that they can afford to donate their time. Why do we want a bunch of pathological criminals like the ANC who just want to loot everything? Now, this is stated a long time back. You cannot legislate the poor into freedom by legislating the wealthy out of freedom. When one person receives something without working for it, another person must work for without receiving. The government cannot give to anyone anything that the government doesn't first take from somebody else. When half of the people get the idea that they don't have to work because the other half is going to take care of them, when the other half get the idea that it does no good to work because someone else is going to get what you work for, that, my dear friend, is about the end of any nation. You cannot multiply wealth by dividing it. Common sense. So what are people concerned about? Well, according to the polls, most people are concerned about unemployment, corruption, and crime. Of course, also drugs, alcohol, prostitution, and poverty. And then you start getting service delivery, living conditions, water supply, education, all the way down to infrastructure, quality of life, and so on. These are issues people are concerned about. But you know, the government doesn't want to deal with real issues, so they invent issues. Racism. And they start to come up with creating like gender confusion, gender fluidity. We've just had Weinberg Girls High School admitting a gender-confused individual, a boy who's called transgender, and they're getting applauded for this. How many people want their daughters going to school with another boy in all-girls school and sharing the showers with this character. I mean, really, is this really an intelligent idea? So they don't deal with real issues. They've got to manufacture issues. Now, this shows you how inaccurate and unreliable these polls are. According to this, if elections for the National Assembly were to take place tomorrow, which party would you vote for? Well, according to this, 16% EFF. Well, that's not what happened. The DA, 9%. Inkatha Freedom Party, not even 1%. And, well, you can't see many. Freedom Front, under 1%, 0.2%. But that's not the way it turned out, is it? But this is what the, what do you call these? This is the predictions. I've decided who I'll vote for. I have not decided who to vote to. I've decided not to vote. This isn't even accurate. More than half of the people didn't vote anyway. So we put out our Biblical Issues Voters Guide since 1982. We've been putting out voters guides. And they deal with a whole lot of key issues. Now, I wouldn't have thought our little website and our one-page A4 leaflet was a big threat. But we've had Cope threatening us with lawsuits. We've had phone calls, very hostile people threatening about this and arguing, and lots of people threatening legal activity. You think, did we not have freedom of speech, freedom of opinion, freedom of thought? Even on here, we say we interpret the policies not on the basis of their published statements, but in terms of their voting records and track records. And please provide us with more information. If you see anything inaccurate, provide us with documentation that we can improve this record, continually updating it. To the law and to the testimony, if they do not speak according to this word, it's because there's no light in them. Amazing they can find a little voter's guide a threat. In fact, in Zimbabwe, they banned voter's guides shortly after we used them there. All voter's guides. One of our friends up in Transvaal put our voter's guide up on poles and posters, and also put it in, this is the Daily Sun newspaper. Very nice. Other people designed this poster, please don't kill me with the vote. These are pro-life parties. Those are abortion on demand parties. Very clear, single issue. Abortion is murder. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. God calls it murder. Aborcy is mort. Say no to abortion. These are people in Transvaal made a stand for life. That National Alliance for Life conference just a week and a half ago. Choose life. Say no to abortion. This is quite a good church board. Gradually, the unthinkable becomes tolerable, then acceptable, then legal, then praised. It's true. We have to make a stand early, because otherwise you get the situation now where perversion is considered approved. So they called it exe, have your say. We all walked through this process of the voter's roll, the inker, the ballot paper, the voting compartments, the controller. This is all designed to prevent theft, prevent people stealing votes. And yet, do you know, there were cases where people boasted, even on social media, they managed to vote twice and more than that. So we had 48 parties contesting, 220,000 election staff. And by the way, in most countries like America, those people are volunteers, Switzerland, so on. Only here, they're all paid. And you could see they're fat cats on a gravy train. 50 million ballot papers using 400 tons of paper. Oh, I hope they recycle. 56,000 stationery packs, 24,000 voting stations, signs, voting compartments and all the rest of it going through. And you've got 26 million registered voters, and most of the voting stations are open by 11 o'clock in the morning. Only five weren't open by 5 p.m. Yay.
Is there signs in voting
Sorry?
Is there signs in voting
Yes. The final tally of the South African election, which is perceived as a referendum on President Cyril Ramaphosa, Cyril the Scroll, showed the ruling African National Congress winning 57% of the votes cast in its worst performance since the advent of one man, one vote election in 1994. That's actually a quote from Russia Today as well. The website of the Electoral Commission revealed that the ANC polled 10 million votes of the 17 million votes cast, which is less than 11 million votes that they won in 2014, underscoring the fact that the ANC is declining. Their popularity is on the wane. Now, bear in mind, we've got 59 million people in the country. 59 million people in the country. ANC got 10 million votes. So Yes. Well, that's if you accept that there wasn't any cheating, fraud, and so on. The biggest opposition, the Democratic Alliance, the DA, got 3,600,000 votes, representing over 20% of the votes. Lower than their 22% or 4 million votes they garnered in the last elections, 2014. However, Julius Malema's extreme leftist economic freedom fighters, EFF, or Everything for Free Party, who supports on the rise, they clinched the third spot with 1,800,000 votes, representing over 10% of the votes cast, significantly improving on its performance just 5 years ago. In 2014, EFF, which is a breakaway, although probably just a deception operation, still loyal to the ANC, received 6% of the votes. So, how do we analyze the results? This was an exceptionally low turnout election, an almost shockingly low turnout election compared to previous national elections. South Africa's never had a national election with less than 70% of the registered voters turning out. In 2014, we got to 72%. Now, bear in mind, we had 104% of the electorate vote in the 1994 elections. That wasn't an error. 104% of the electorate voted in 1994. Presumably, some people voted more than once. One man, one vote. Some people, one man, several votes. So the overall turnout for the 2019 elections, including overseas voters who turned in their VEC 10 forms, is 65%. 65% of the registered voters turned out to vote. This is much lower than anticipated, and it influenced the election outcome significantly. Mike Davies, the founder of the political advisory company Kagoga Consulting, told Bloomberg News, Ramaphosa's popularity, particularly amongst constituencies that were deserting the party under Zuma, appears to have played a major role in convincing voters to give the ANC another chance. So after lying, failing, and being as corrupt as hell, looting the country over the last 25 years, let's give them a sixth chance. You know, if you make a mistake, well, we're all human. If you make the same mistake twice, you're stupid. You make the same mistake three times, you're imbecilic. You make the same mistake four or five times or six times, you shouldn't be out without adult supervision. Ramaphosa's promises to address corruption, jobs, and inequality have resonated amid voter skepticism of what the opposition parties offer. Again, I'm quoting from Mike Davies, who's a serious liberal. But, okay, he promised to do all these things, but even Thabo Mbeki, not my favorite president. In fact, honestly, in my opinion, Thabo Mbeki is the worst president South Africa ever had, in that he was the most vicious, malicious, doctrinaire Marxist. He was going to disarm everyone with his Firearm Control Act 2000, want to close down the Christian schools, close down Christian radio stations. He was the worst president we've ever had, even if most people didn't recognize that. That's my opinion. Even Thabo Mbeki said the ANC list that Ramaphosa provided amounts to returning a whole lot of criminals to Parliament. He said the list is problematic. Now, that if Thabo Mbeki, who's ANC, he said that the list was just... So Ramaphosa says, I'm going to clean up Parliament and all this. But what does he offer? A whole big list of criminals who've been identified by the corruption investigation committees and so on as being as corrupt as hell and having lied to... committed perjury in court. Pulling through its worst performance in 25 years, the African National Congress wins last week's elections, underscoring a full term for Cyril Ramaphosa and a pyrrhic victory that cast a slur on its reputation. This is News Nigeria commentary, and, well, worst performance in 25 years, certainly. Pyrrhic victory, you know what a pyrrhic victory is. It's a victory that actually amounts to defeat in many ways. But cast a slur on its reputation. I don't know what reputation it had to slur. A bunch of communist terrorist criminals. The Washington Post wrote this. Now that the job is officially his for the next term, the honeymoon must end. On paper, Cyril Ramaphosa is the perfect candidate for the cleanup job. He has projected himself as an outsider, the ideal person to lead because he ostensibly has an arm's length distance from corruption. In reality, Ramaphosa is the ultimate insider. The ANC's core campaign strategy was to confess to its sins, of which there are many. As senior leaders crisscrossed the country in campaign mode, they apologized and promised not to make the same mistakes that they've done the last five times for the last 25 years. The ANC outpaced their next biggest party, the Democratic Alliance, by almost 3 votes to 1. Voters seem to have accepted their apologies. The Economic Freedom Fighters, led by Julius Malema, did well to secure nearly 11% national votes, although this was still a distant third. A total of 14 parties of the 48 won seats in national South African Parliament, with the ANC winning 230 majority parliamentary seats, followed by DA winning 84 seats, EFF winning 44 seats. In Cardiff, Freedom Party won 14, Freedom Front Plus won 10 seats. To claim the fourth and fifth positions in Parliament, the other 18 seats were split amongst 9 other parties. So this is the way it worked out. In terms of number of votes, in terms of support, going down in size from the biggest amount of votes cast to the least. Now, interesting enough, there's the ZACP, or the Southern Capitalist Party. They apparently only got 15,000 votes, which is 0.09%. And in fact, I think the reason is there was no reason to support the Southern Capitalist Party because they didn't even have any clear indication of how they intended to enforce their policies, whereas the Freedom Front does. The Freedom Front's a very capitalist party, and their free enterprise model is well spaced out and have got a track record. So probably people who agreed with ZACP would have voted for the Freedom Front anyway because they've got a track record and their policies were even clearer than the ZACP. ZACP was a nice idea, but why reinvent the wheel? If you've already got a party that's advocating those causes, why do you need to go for it? Interesting. The National Assembly now, if this, by the way, is the amount of money the IEC harvested from the parties that didn't get into Parliament. 16,700,000 rand, that's of the deposit. These are deposits forfeited, depending on where in the line it is. Just in the Western Cape, for example, over 1 million rand of parties that tried to campaign here was lost to IEC, and of course a lot of them are taking legal challenges to it. So this is how Parliament works out. The yellow are the ANC, the blue are the DA, and the red are the EFF. So that's the biggest bunch. And then you've got the IFP, which is black, and then you've got the green over here for the Freedom Front Plus. In fact, the colour scheme seem pretty fair. Freedom Front Plus likes the green. I think it's because of the green panel on the Fierkler Transvaal. So with 26 million people registered to vote, turnout was estimated 65%. That means, oh, and by the way, 235,000 spoiled ballots. 235,000 spoiled ballots. If all those ballots were for one party, it would have made itself the fifth largest party in Parliament. How many of those spoiled ballots could be ballots that they just add another X on or spoil it in one way or another after the fact and then call it a spoiled ballot? If they did an audit to the spoiled ballots, I bet you won't find any ANC or DA or EFF ones amongst us. It's probably going to be other parties that might have even been deprived an extra seat or something on the basis of spoiled ballots. That's a lot of spoiled ballots. And sometimes they've been, well, whenever, for example, a Cape party says every time that they have asked for an audit required by law, they've always found their ballots amongst the spoiled or even in the DA or ANC stacks. They said every time. There's never been a time that they've required a legal audit where they go through it all again, where they haven't found their things had been misplaced. They've always gained votes just by doing an audit. So plainly there is, I mean, there's human error, but then there's also malicious deliberate fraud. So this is a breakdown. Just taking the black electorate, 75% of black people voted for the ANC, 4.7% of black people voted for the DA, 13% of black people voted for the EFF. So the DA has positioned themselves to get black votes. They failed to get more than 4.7% of the black vote, and that's only an increase of 0.4% from what Helen Zille managed to get in the last election. So Mzimani has not brought in the black votes. In fact, he's shed 500,000 votes. No, he's lost more than that. Much more than 500,000 votes, as I said, vote shedding. This is an extraordinary result, and it confirms two key points. Firstly, the ANC vote total in this proportion of the electorate got severely deflated by two factors. There was lower turnout and lower share of the vote. Secondly, the ANC bleed-off went almost exclusively to the EFF, which is worse. And the DA achieved such marginal growth in the black electorate, 0.4%. I mean, that's pretty pathetic. After all their positioning themselves for BBBEE, they lost a lot of votes from that. The ANC overperformed on the national ballot compared to the provincial ballot in each province. And what this means is, because you've got two ballots, many people split their ballots. So, like, you may decide to vote for, say, the Freedom Front nationally and for the Cape Party locally, for example. Or you might say, I'll vote for IFP locally, but ANC nationally, something like that. So, you can see that in Gauteng, they got 3% more of the votes nationally than they got provincially. In the Western Cape, they got 2.6% more nationally than they got provincially, and so on. Now, why would this be? Well, there's a theory about this. There were ANC national voters who decided to vote for the opposition provincially to give the opposition a chance to govern at the provincial level, service delivery. The two forces both cause a ballot split. It's likely that the ballot split in the suburbs can be attributed to the Cyril Ramaphosa effect, or Ramaphoria, that the ballot split in the townships can actually be attributed to the opposite desire to give the opposition a chance at provincial governance, because they're the ones that actually do the delivery. And so the ANC took a dip in the polls, but especially in the provincial level. More people vote for them nationally than provincially. This means a whole lot of people might have more faith in Cyril Ramaphosa as an individual, but not so much faith in the ANC as a party on the local level. Just an interesting observation. The ANC is down at the provinces at differing levels, but the extent of the ANC's drop in KwaZulu-Natal is remarkable. The ANC lost 11%. They went down 11% in KwaZulu-Natal. That's colossal. This could be the fact that they were voting for Zuma because he is Zulu, and Cyril Ramaphosa's vendor, he's not Zulu. So that could be part of it. The IFP gained 6% in KwaZulu-Natal, which shows the IFP is back. And the ANC is on the decline in KwaZulu-Natal. The rand plummeted before the elections and increased afterwards, indicating that there was maybe some fear, more EFF winning, Black Land Party, BLF, and all the rest. Well, they didn't even feature. So what can we learn from the voting patterns and changes in the balance of power? Well, the first thing is, notice in this very clever cartoon, the Southern Communist Party is standing in the middle. Now, if you've stood in the middle of the seesaw, because you've got young kids on a side and you've got bigger kids on that side, where you put your pressure makes all the difference where the seesaw goes. And you can actually, you know, and I've done it before. I've stood in the middle and pushed it so it goes down, goes up, because otherwise they would be unbalanced. The SACP puts more balance onto the ANC this time. But occasionally they can be pushing for the EFF and so on, who are, let's face it, they're all controlled by the same people. Bear in mind, Southern Communist Party, COSATU, and ANC form a tripartite alliance. And the EFF looks totally Communist Party. Not just looks, is. So who do we think controls them? Now look at this. The percentage that voted for the ANC in 94 was 62%. 99, 66%. 2004, 69%. Down. 2009, 65%. 2014, down to 62%. They've gone up, they're on their way down, and it's inevitable. The ANC is heading down. But notice how COPE went from 7% in 2009 down to basically 0.5% in 2014 and less now. Again, you can see the Democratic Alliance. Look how the DA was going 1.7% in 94, 9.5% in 99, 12%, this is under Helen Zille, 16% in 2009, 22% in 2014. DA thought they soaring. And if they continued this trajectory, assuming they were still under someone like, say, Helen Zille, they would have increased their percentage. Muzimani has taken it back. Now, if you were CEO of a company who had brought your stock shares sales down that much, lost 1 million supporters, customers, 500,000 in this last election, well, Muzimani should have got the axe. But anyway, just interesting to see how the DA has changed dramatically. The amount of votes all the way up to 4 million and down. EFF, well, they're on the up. In Carter, they started stronger. They've gone down. They're on the way up again. National Freedom Party wiped out. New National Party wiped out. Roughly 9.3 million registered voters didn't bother to turn up on the day and cast their votes. 9.3 million. Another 9 million South Africans of voting age didn't bother to register to vote. That's over 18 million people who chose not to participate in the electoral process. Now, that means about 18 million people said, well, what difference could I make? But that's more than the number of votes cast. They could make a huge difference if we could get the uninvolved to register to vote. But you're only going to do that if you can give them a vision different from the bunch of political liars and crooks and thieves that have been ruining it. Of course, then you've got these Christians who think all you've got to do is blow a shofar on the beach and wave some flags and chant something in tongues and agricadabra, Mary Poppins, everything will just get itself sorted, which would be nice. But let's face it, God expects us to do something. What you sow is what you reap. In KwaZulu-Natal, in Cardiff Freedom Party, for the first time since 2014, beat the DA to second place, grew to 3.38% on the national level. In the Western Cape, which is the only province not won by the ANC, the DA declined from 59% to 55%. So the DA has had a decline. However, 66% of the DA electorate in the Western Cape in a poll have said if they had a chance, they'd like to have a referendum to vote for Western Cape independence. So while the national leadership may not think that, the supporters of the DA are secession-minded, a majority, as are, of course, the Freedom Front and, of course, the Cape Party is not just secession-minded. They lock, stock, and barrel before it. The Western Cape has never supported national government. It's always been a different way of thinking. Now, here you're just getting... Again, you're seeing whether they're going up or whether they're going down. And you can see in 2014, 2009, 2004, going back, whether we're going up or down. And interesting, just getting an idea. And the Good for Nothing Party actually got 0.4% of the vote nationally. Amazing that. What is also intriguing is the ACDP increased their support dramatically. But this is still less than half of the votes they got in 1999. So 20 years ago, with a population half of what it is now, they got double as many votes as they got now on the increase. And most of the ACDP votes came from the Western Cape. Most. Like 80%. And considering leadership's all in Transvaal, that should make one think. These are cartoons just showing what, yeah, May Day. You've got these fat cats and, well, those in the gravy train. And being pulled by the others, the corruption. This is what people think of the government. So what are they doing voting for them? The presidents and the ministers live like that, and their voters live like this. What does this tell you? After making a big noise about honest, clean government and rooting out banned eggs, the ANC's elected National Assembly of candidates who've lied under oath in the Constitutional Court are deeply implicated in Basasa and state capture scandal. The ANC's rotten to the core. Abortion, nepotism and corruption. The middle letters of cancer's ANC. And these are the fat cats in Parliament. The list of candidates for the ANC in 2000 elections looks more like the most wanted list on the police station than a list of potential members for cabinet. Even the left wing's home porn video man is on their list again. Never underestimate the power of stupid people in a large group. See, I told you, Cyril, a majority in South Africa don't mind us stealing from them. If you can re-vote for a party that keeps stealing from you, Eskom, 139 billion rand theft probe. You wonder why we got power failures? Take the DA in the Western Cape. They raked in a billion more than planned in 1 year. In 18 months, 1.6 billion rand extra taxes and water, more than what they spent. They said they're underspent, which means they're overtaxed. It's another way of saying overtaxed. We paid 1.6 billion rand more in Cape Town Metropole for water than they needed. Punitive water taxes. And of course, we haven't even spoken about the gangster state, state capture. But just to give you an idea, the AU, the African Union, has upped the corruption in South Africa from 25% of the GDP, gross domestic product, to 33%. 33% of the gross domestic product of South Africa is stolen by government corruption every year. Now, that is over 1.3 trillion rand. Now, I don't have this in rand, but it works the same in size. $100 bill, 100 rand bill. Okay, that's 10,000. You can fit it in your pocket. That's a million. You can put it in a plastic bag and carry around. That's 100 million. That's a pallet. We deal with pallets outside, about a ton on a pallet. Right. Now, here you've got a billion rand or dollars. That's 10 pallets, 10 tons. That's a pallet. Okay, see, there's the 10,000. There's the million. That is a billion. This is a trillion. The ANC steals 1.3 trillion rand a year by corruption. That's not counting inflation. That's not even counting taxation or the bank charges. There's a pallet. There's the man. There's a pentecticon. And these are double pallets. Double pallets. You could land an aircraft on a field like that. That is $1 trillion or rands. That's what this government steals. No, they steal more than that every year, according to African Union corruption investigations. And they plan to steal this much again this year. And they've just gotten a mandate to do it. Corruption is killing us. No kidding. 14 months ago, the world applauded Ramaphosa's appointment as president. Ramaphosa made promises about cutting down the number of ministers in the cabinet. We've got the biggest cabinet in the world. And government officials and ruthlessly weeding out corruption. Gee, wouldn't that be nice? A lady stated in bold letters and with exclamation marks, a white lady, at last a president to be proud of. Christians, including a Christian woman in the ACDP, published in her social media, we're saved. Our prayers have been answered. Now we can begin to rebuild South Africa again. Why? Because Cyril, that's this chap hugging and kissing Zuma, had become president of the African National Congress. Do we love to be made fools of that much that we even applaud communists for empty promises? Can you name one person who's been prosecuted for corruption in the last 14 months of Cyril Ramaphosa's worthless presidency? One? I mean, he should have prosecuted tens of thousands, but can we even name one? The ANC is killing us indeed. This is a fact. They are killing us. Literally. And economically. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. You could write 2 Peter 2 verse 19 across the candidate list of just about every one of these criminals. Just take one example. This general, Barney Hatchmwayo of the SANDF. His official driver, Corporal Marakela, shot a lady on a motorbike in the chest in a road rage incident, and he managed to use his official BMW and SANDF weapons in an armed robbery and shootout in Limpopo. But don't worry. Vote for the ANC. They're here to protect you. Russian President Vladimir Putin said, just recently after this election, Africa is a cemetery for Africans. When African becomes rich, his bank accounts are in Switzerland, he travels to France for medical treatment, he invests in Germany, he buys from Dubai, he consumes Chinese, he prays in Rome or Mecca, his children study in Europe, he travels to Canada, USA or Europe for tourism. If he dies, he'll be buried in his native country of Africa. Africa is just a cemetery for Africans. How could a cemetery be developed? Now, no Western leader would ever say this. But Vladimir Putin doesn't seem to care what anyone thinks. But unfortunately, a lot of what he says is right. Do you know that 40% of the wealth of Africa is held offshore? Africans don't even invest in their own continent. Africans put their money elsewhere. They don't trust their own continent. How can we grow if we don't invest in our own continent? You're complaining about not having a job, but you voted for the ANC twice? Three times? Four times? Five times? Six times in some cases? I mean, how stupid is that? Here's one post somebody made in 25 March. Our battle in South Africa is not about blacks versus whites or rich versus poor. The real battle going on is a battle between democracy and communism. Communism is spreading rapidly across our country. The promise of free stuff is attractive to the young, the uneducated, and the lazy. The ANC will soon throw a celebration party for the real members. Bottles will be popped, sleigh queens will be invited, they'll have a German cars convoy. The rest of you will be stuck with an ANC t-shirt, inked fingers, still unemployed, living in informal settlements. You'll soon be burning tires and complaining about service delivery. Insanity is voting for the same party over and over but expecting a different result. Some people see it. This EFF chap admitted on TV that to test the system, he encouraged EFF supporters to vote more than once. Now, isn't that illegal? And isn't that incitement? Isn't it quite serious to commit fraud in the electoral process? Yeah, coalition government. Coalition government. And so here's some of the party results. Right. Do you know why there's left and right? Ecclesiastes 10 verse 2. The heart of the wise inclines to his right, but the heart of the fool to the left. Actually, that's funny, but the origin, according to Otto Scott in the Great Christian Revolution, is in the French Revolution, when the communist revolutionaries identified themselves as the left, said, we are the damned, we are the goats, we are the left. Because in the Bible, God always speaks about, to the sheep on his right, he will say, enter the joy of the Lord. To the goats on his left, depart from me, cursed in the lake of fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. And so the left is always termed very negatively in the Bible. And so the revolutionaries in the French Revolution 1789 said, we are the left, we are the damned, we are the goats, we're Antichrist. Now, according to the Freedom Front's manifesto, the Freedom Front Plus is irrevocably committed to the realization of communities, and particularly the Afrikaners, internationally recognized right to self-determination, territorial or otherwise, the maintenance, protection, and promotion of their rights and interests, as well as the promotion of the right of self-determination of any other community bound by common language and cultural heritage of South Africa. And in this last election, they made an alliance with Pieter Maree, who's famous in the Cape Flats and colored community, and Pieter Maree made a strong stand for self-determination of the Western Cape as well. And they grew faster than any other party in this last election. They more than trebled their votes, which is, you know, over 300% increase is spectacular. They have gone from 3 seats in Parliament to 10, and they snatched those seats mostly from the DA. As I said, the DA shed 500,000 seats, 500,000 votes. Well, interesting to just note that we had enough people committed to secession in these small parties that if these three alone had combined, that would have gotten a seat in the provincial legislature. Just showing the importance of alliances. The Cape Party, Independent Civic Association, Al Jamar, all want an independent Cape. If they could have just made an alliance, they would have had a seat already there to start articulating in a provincial parliament. So it's not good that we had at least 7 Christian political parties in the last election. Think how much more votes they could have got if they had combined. But it's not always numbers that count. You know, a lion can stand against the herd maybe, but sometimes we feel a bit like that poor lion there. So what does the future hold? Prophecy class cancelled due to unforeseen circumstances. It's hard to predict the future, especially if it's in the future. So what do the results mean for us? Well, sorry to say, you're not going to see an end to service delivery protests because the government's not going to improve anything. They're going to make it worse. This is just an example of the kind of hideous things that go on. This Sunday, just passed, this driver of this truck had a stone thrown at the Durance from a bridge.
Is it brick?
A brick. And you can see the hole in the windscreen right there. There, can you see? And he was killed. He didn't die instantly. There's the cam footage of the showing inside of the vehicle too. He was trampled to death by the entire community of the Durans looting this entire truck of everything. Now, as this person has said, May the 12th, today's Mother's Day, when sons and daughters throughout the country paid tribute to the marvelous moms for all love and support given throughout their lives. There's one mother, however, who didn't receive a call from her son this day. She's the mother of the truck driver from Time Link Cargo who at 5 a.m. was passing through Detroit when some criminals threw a boulder from a bridge at his truck, hit his windscreen, smashed through it, hit the driver, then lost control of the vehicle. There were two drivers in the cab, both South Africans, and while the uninjured driver was trying to free his colleague who was trapped between the steering wheel and the seat, a marauding mob descended in the truck. Some went for the goods in the trailer, others climbed the cab to steal whatever they could lay their hands on. The trapped driver was trampled on by these heartless thugs as he lay there, probably hoping that one of them might have pity on him and cared more about saving his life than stealing his goods. It was not to be. They didn't care about him at all. He died, or more accurately, was trampled to death as they scrambled all over him. The entire load was also stolen by looters. My heart is broken tonight, cries out for the driver and his mom who never got that call. Heartless criminals and detourists. This, unfortunately, is not unusual, according to the truck drivers. There are other people who shared, again this weekend, people getting stoned from bridges, so that some vehicles are having to travel like this. This is ridiculous. And of course, you can have some on one May Day. What was that? Was this last year or the year before? They looted over 30 of these Pentechnicons, these trucks, at one toll gate in Mooi River on N3 in Natal. And you wonder why prices go up. Well, the companies won't take the loss. The companies pass the loss onto the consumer by increasing costs. And insurance companies have to increase the cost. This steals from everyone. This doesn't just steal from Spa or whoever happens to be doing it. And of course, destroying vehicles, destroying lives, property. Who wants to invest in a country that does this? This is disgraceful, and this is what the ANC does. And then you have people who are pointing out that here's an SAPS officer admitting police are involved in farm attacks. We've arrested serving members of the police during house robberies. Police weapons have been used in attacks. Not just personal weapons issued to every officer, but rifles that have to be signed out from the station. We know police ammunition has been used in farm attacks. Here's ANC supporters. Look at this SA Communist Party. Vote ANC. And what have they got there? Models of white babies being impaled. Is this funny? Who can even... Why would they even do this as a joke? It's not funny. Imagine if somebody from another party was putting black babies impaled. I mean, would that be acceptable? Just in April, these are the stats on 126 farm attacks, 16 farm murders, farmers being murdered every 7.5 days on average. This is just for the last month. Now, do you know they've set up a memorial to farmers being murdered? Now, this, you look at it and you think this is a military memorial. Soldiers or police have died in the course of duty. No, this is commemorating farmers killed in each province in the country. This is just a war, actually. It is war. And names and dates, places. If history could teach us anything, it would be that private property is inextricably linked to civilization. You cannot have civilization if you don't have respect for life and property. Contracts. Now, Marine Le Pen is being called the Joan of Arc of France. She says the European Union is not Europe. It's an ideology without land, without people, without roots, without soul, without civilization. The European Union is killing millennial nations. The AU, South Africa, the Union of South Africa, are the same. We are not one nation. This is many nations, and every nation's got the right to rule themselves. So what can we expect? Well, affirmative action is going to increase under this present bunch because the DA is committed to it, as is the ANC. You're going to continue education standards to continue to plummet in the government indoctrination gulags. And the latest they've got planned for us now is yoga, masturbation, LGBTQ plus in textbooks for grade fours. Grade four? What used to be standard two when I was growing up? Are they out of their mind? This isn't appropriate in standard four, let alone grade four. Cutting edge curriculums. And this creep here, Marlene Wasserman, this child abuser, wants kids to be exposed to what they call cutting edge curriculum on gender nonconformity, single parent families, masturbation, all the rest of it. This is really what we need. So we've got at one time, the government proposing porn block for South Africa and promoting porn as textbooks for grade fours. Is this schizophrenic or what? Okay, what or how best can we respond? More than half of those eligible to vote did not vote. More than half of the voters said, what difference can I make? If we could mobilize the inactive or disillusioned citizens to register to vote and to vote their values, we could dramatically change the political landscape in the municipal elections coming up in less than 2 years, 2021. A good goal. There are positive movements for independence of the Western Cape and KwaZulu, which need to be supported, and they're growing. There are bright spots in this country. There's a lot of resistance. And no matter who's president, Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of the trouble from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. So what can I do? We can all do something. First and foremost, this is an information war. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. We need to be informed. And we need resources to set the record straight. Just last week, we're dealing with the false narratives, the false stories of history, which are complete fake myths, which we need to be able to refute in order to counter the communist disinformation, which is built on guilt, manipulation, and lies. Sketches from South African history, Biblical Principles for Africa. There's all the different books written, like Bulala, Genocide of the Boers, Kuhn Elgin, Stephen Mitford Goodson have written great history books. There's on Andrew Murray, The Forgotten Revival, God Among Zulus. If we know our history, we will be immune to the indoctrination, guilt manipulation of the communists. And then we need to obtain Agenda 2 and Bitter Harvest. These are two good DVDs, one a documentary, the other a drama, showing how communism works and what the second phase of the revolution and farm invasions and redistribution of land, all this looks like on the ground. Our Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website and Facebook page have a lot of details, including, for example, if you want to share about the truck driver, the story. It's already had several thousand shares and over 33,000 reach, several hundred comments already just on that one post about this Mother's Day attack on this trucker. And you can share from there. Young Reformers Out to Change the World, African Christian Action Facebook page is very busy. We need to be interceding. We need to be involved in practical action, and we need to invest in workable solutions like independence for the Western Cape to implement workable strategies for security and survival. There are good technologies and good networks, and we've had groups meeting, strategy groups talking about how we can secure our neighborhoods more effectively. A prudent man foresees evil. We need to be prepared. We need to pray, publish, prepare, and protest. We need to stand up, speak out, and step out. We need to be armed and alert, stock up supplies, have backup plans, secure a home and farm, church or mission. Prepare for lawlessness, power failures, and water mains being cut. Know our neighbors, help one another, there's strength and unity. We need to have real neighborhoods, communities. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. We need to speak up on our community radio station, phone-in programs, write letters to the editor, articles for local community newspapers, contribute or set up websites, blogs, social media that'll deal with these issues. We can organize some public screenings of films like Agenda 2 and Bitter Harvest. I might add, there's a good old film, 1942, Oom Kruger, on Paul Kruger and the Anglo-Boer War and the really big screen epic made in 1942. It's in German with English subtitles, but wow, no expense spared. Casts of thousands. Really, really well made. And again, we need to know our history. 10th of October's Kruger Day. I mean, we should be planning to really celebrate our history and get people to know our history so that we won't be able to be guilt manipulated by these communists today. Our Security and Survival Handbook has practical solutions on this. We need to know our history, and we need to be prepared. We need to rescue, redeem, restore, revive, and reform. Build community support structures. Support civil defense or neighborhood watch organizations. The thing is, we need to get networked. Work for decentralization. Support independence for the Cape movement. Desertlanders are a survival group, particularly strong in the rural areas. But there's groups in our area that we can network with for information and mutual support. I know Drakenstein's got a very good farm watch group, and there's a good community watch program in Table View. And Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? So, any questions, comments, complaints, or criticisms? Yes. Philip Rosenthal.
When I was working at the book, we expressed chapter of the same. Does anyone, I know the courses that have had a free election over, but has anyone asked you for a correction on his statement?
Well, when he posted this, and I saw a whole lot of people sharing it, and it all went back to Philip Rosenthal. Here's the originator of the slander that Freedom Front Plus has shown you. Here's the originator that saying that they want to persecute Christians, which is such an outrageous slander, and of that they promote homosexual marriage, which is also outrageous. So I've challenged him and asked him, can he point out one evidence for this and so on, and give us some documentation, because that's outrageous statements. Several other people have as well. Hannes Fillion I've seen, and others. He hasn't answered those yet. I know that the Freedom Front is overwhelmed with a whole lot of things, but I'm sure their legal office is going to come round to dealing with them too. It's just scandalous, because I know it would have cost them a lot more votes, because that's very damaging kind of attack. I know people of high levels who were taken in by, because, you know, you don't have to convince someone, you just need to create a doubt. And when you find out later it was fraud. Well, just take, for example, the Americans went on a major war which killed hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq on the basis of weapons of mass destruction, which turned out in the end not to be there. But the damage has been done. By the time you prove it wasn't, well, by then Saddam Hussein's killed and a few hundred thousand other Iraqis and, of course, a few thousand allies as well. And the Christians now have lost the stability they had in the Middle East that they were getting protection from. And so Iraq has gone from 1.3 million Christians to not even 100,000 Christians, just as a result of that war based on a lie. It's just one lie. Lies always cause problems. Even if it's a noble lie. We've got a video here on the Oklahoma bombing. It's called Noble Lines, how the Clinton administration organized this. It's a false flag operation. And there's no doubt it was a false flag operation organized by the Clinton government. And it's called a noble lie. Of course, they blew a few hundred people up, ruined all kinds of lives. But it was for noble cause. That's the mentality. Yes, Rizal.
On the life orientation issue, last year I heard on a radio station that they were going to replace life orientation with a compulsory history subject. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm a bit confused now.
Well, this is pretty bad. And the trouble is, it's not just the ANC that promotes this stuff. The DA has sponsored some of the worst LGBTQ gender confusion things around. They're more advanced in the Cape than anywhere else in the country, this LGBTQ stuff.
Mm-hmm. But my question is, weren't they going to replace our own? Now they're starting with new plans for life orientation.
Schultz, do you know anything about this?
All I've seen, the little bit I've come across, is that there are loads of Christians that are actually backing this. Brain dead. Absolutely brain dead.
You mean backing even the sex education of schools?
I've got a black pastor friend in the Eastern Cape that has been speaking out about this, and he has been attacked by white Christians like you cannot believe.
Shameful.
Absolutely shameful.
That's staggering. Well, I've put on the table the latest of Gospel Defense League, which is dealing with BBEE, and also a message for the country. We've also got a list there of recommended films, because I think there's a lot of junk out there, but there's some really good films out there. Of course, a lot of it's in our library here as well. Dramas, documentaries, and so on, from history, missions, and so on. Now, most of what comes out of Hollywood is absolute irredeemable garbage, poison even. But there are some good things that have slipped through here and there. Well made, a lot of them are older. Like I said, the one on Urm Kruger from 1942 is just one of those that somehow most people don't even know about. the best film yet made on Anglo-Boer War and Paul Kruger. But because it was made during the Second World War, it sort of got lost. Most people don't know about it, but it's there and available in our library. So you can take that list. I've got some other things. Yes, promoting an upcoming conference next week as well, the Back to Bible Conference Friday next week. If you know of any pastors, teachers, evangelists, especially Bible college lecturers and so on, that would be a good place for them to go. Any other comments or questions?
If anyone needs Bibles or tracts, they can also just speak
yes.
to anyone and we can help them.
We've got a good supply. This Agenda 2 film is brilliant. If you want to know where to start to watch this and then to show it to others, 2 hours of the Agenda 2, you understand the whole picture of how communism works. And it's not a conspiracy, it's an agenda. As you can see, the clenched fist. This is communism. This is how they work. And it's not a theory. It's a published agenda, which they have done in practice. And so this not only shows what they've written, but what they've done. And it's an open agenda since 1848 and very clear what they're doing. So if we understand this, we are immediately immune to all the lies of what they do out there, because it's not like the communists are original. Jill, you had a comment?
Your comment on having shown the two millionaires, Donald Trump, some say that he really isn't a millionaire.
A billionaire.
Some say that he is avoiding taxes. What are your comments?
Well, he's obviously a very, very wealthy person, and naturally, wealthy people get wealthy by avoiding paying taxes, and I think that he's probably got very creative about it. You know that when John D. Rockefeller became vice president of America for the first time, he was examined, and it was discovered he had never paid taxes in his life. Richest man in America, Rockefeller. And of course, he never carries money with him. He's got people around to do things, and he's got trusts and what have you. And so the richest man in America had never paid tax. That's not unusual.
Right now, Amazon apparently.
Yes.
The company in the world apparently, and they're not paying a cent in tax.
But that's typical.
Yeah.
Totally typical.
You can pay it, doesn't pay tax.
Yeah.
This way to get around it.
This is why it made a lot of people confused when it was pointed out by people like Stephen Mitford Goodson that you don't need income tax, you don't need GST, you don't need VAT or anything. All you need is TEAL, Total Economic Activity Levy. 1% or less, he thought it could be a lot less than 1%.
0.1%.
Even 0.1% of all economic transactions going into tax would equal more than what we're getting in taxes now. You say, how is that possible? Well, no exceptions. Anglo-American, Old Mutual, all of them. And, well, what about people who use cash? Doesn't matter, they say. Insignificant. Just economic transactions, automatic deduction of 0.1%. They could give it. Now, which of us would mind 0.1 or 1% even? Because what are we paying now? 30, 40%? If you add our GST, our VAT, our petrol, rates and taxes and all the rest, we're probably paying more than half of our total income in tax accumulated. Who would mind 1% tax? But the way it goes now is a few people pay a lot of tax and the richest people pay nothing. And, I mean, this is just the way it works. It's so, yes, Donald Trump is obviously a very, very clever businessman. For example, he moved into a slum, which had been abandoned in a city. And he negotiated with the city. If I come in here and do urban renewal and so on, I have 50 years no tax. What's this worthless urban slum? I mean, it's like mess. He turned it into Manhattan. He bought up and rejuvenated the whole of the inner city. And the arrangement for the city is, I'll do this, but no taxes. Clever man. Very clever man. Well, he obviously made these arrangements. The fact is, people like that obviously have the best lawyers, the best tax advisors, accountants, whatever. And the thing is, I'd rather have someone like that running my country than these political criminals or incompetents. Or traitors like Rolf Meyer or Pick Boerter. So, yes, look, Donald Trump may not be the nicest person. He may not be the person you want as your neighbor, but he's a great businessman, developer, and president for the country, and he's getting better deals for the American people than any previous government's been giving to him. And by the way, remember, his pastor was Norman Vincent Peale, Presbyterian pastor, and he got Power of Positive Thinking every Sunday. And he's Power of Positive Thinking Exhibit A. Shall?
That's how the big time business guys work. Really, he's a deal maker. And he has the lawyers and the accountants, everybody around him that see to that kind of thing. Sonia and I just went to a lecture the other day, and there's a young man, he's 30s, he's doing extremely well, and somebody asked him, how do you structure your companies? He said, I don't know. I'll give you my lawyer's number, you can find him and find out how my companies are structured. I don't know. He's just a deal maker. I bet he doesn't pay tax either, this guy.
Oh, yeah. But the point is, when Donald Trump got this tax exemption for 50 years on those areas in Manhattan, it was worthless crime zone. It was just a place for gangs and graffiti. There was no economic benefit in the place. Like, he took a rubbish dump of New York, and he turned it into some major golfing estate and what have you. But this is what this guy does. He moves into... Can you remember... The waterfront in the 80s and so on, it was a dump. It was really just a dump. There's a bunch of fish warehouses, a couple of trawlers, and a lot of rubble. And whoever looked at that and said, we could turn that into some, that's now probably what, the richest piece of real estate in Africa? Most effectively run. And that's what free enterprise can do. Even Century City. What was it? It was a worthless piece of nothing between places. And some businessmen saw something and they developed it and they did the city a favor. And we all benefit. And a communist is going to resent. Why is he benefiting? But he's benefiting everyone else while he's benefiting himself. So if I'm going to resent someone who's doing something clever and improving the environment, I'm stealing for myself. And there's those people who want to resent it because they don't like that you're benefiting. But meanwhile, he's benefiting everybody. So why can't Cape Town be run as well as Century City or the waterfront? It's run by free enterprise versus, you know, so that's the difference. And I'd rather have America run by free enterprise or South Africa run by free enterprise than by a bunch of politicians. Yes. Politics. Poly, many, ticks, blood-sucking parasites. Politics, many blood-sucking parasites. Yeah. So, any other comments? Yes.
I just maybe to summarize the whole thing that, you know, it's not people put their hope in the government because they don't know what civil government must do. But you can just see that these people have no fear for God. And that's why they are doing all this thing. So I think it's to call, especially pastors and people, to not just preach how Jesus is going to forgive all your sin, but to bring, you must have a fear for God. It's a fearful thing to fall in the hands of the angry, of the living God, the Bible says. So that's the only solution, to preach that God is to be feared. And if you forget that, then we end up with what we see now.
Not only do they not fear God, they hate God. Yeah. We're dealing with people who are actually Satanists in many cases. There's a lot of evidence coming out that a lot of these top leaders, and we're talking about the Clintonistas and all of the rest, that they're part of child abuse satanic cults. At the core, and I've heard this in Africa, shortly after the MMD came to power in Zambia, I was with a bunch of cabinet ministers and top leaders in the new government in Zambia. We're talking about 1991 now. And they were telling me how Kenneth Kaunda would have satanic worship sessions in State House in Lusaka. And Dos Santos, Shosana, Mugabe, Mobutu Sese Seko, they came there and Satan appeared to them bodily. And I said, oh, come on. I said, I know you don't believe us, but said, it happened. And I said, clutching at straws, I said, but Michael Casti wrote in his book, The Passing Summer, that Kenneth Kaunda was a Christian gentleman. And they laughed like they had stitches. And they said, your Michael Casti's got a problem when he can't tell the difference between a Satanist and a Christian. Now, that's from Zambians, and these were top people, including cabinet ministers. One was the ambassador for Zambia to the UN and so on, and they said they saw it. Satan appeared bodily to these people. And they also said they were all involved in human sacrifice and cannibalism. Now, that sounds bizarre. But then didn't Julian Assange reveal a whole lot of details that a whole lot of people, the Clintons and so on, and Obamas, were involved in satanic sex cult human sacrifice deals involving pedophilia and all the rest? He dumped a whole lot of info about this. I haven't bothered to read any of it because I'm sure it's not edifying. But there's serious evidence that we've got a top echelon in the New World Order who are part of this kind of, they do anything to anyone and they get away with anything kind of attitude. Those are the kind of, have you heard of something Grove, California?
Bohemian Grove. They do the, they call it the sacrifice of gay. So to kill down their conscience, they say, they come all together and then they sacrifice a make or, I don't know, maybe a real baby. And they all like party around it and say they are sacrificing dull gay, is what they call it, which is their conscience.
Now, apparently, of all the presidents America's had in the last 40 or 50 years, the only two who didn't go to this this grove is Ronald Reagan and Trump. The others apparently all been part of this sort of thing. So, I mean, I wouldn't know. I'm just reporting what others have published. But there's an evil at a high level, which I know that that's so in parts of Africa. We know that Samora Michelle was involved in cannibalism. We know that Mobutu Sese was and so on. There's very, very evil people. But apparently, they've got those same people up in Europe. And I'm told, for example, that Macron of France is one of them. Right in the very core. And you're talking about Rothschilds and Bilderbergers and serious banksters involved in it. We're basically, they're doing everything the evil hearts desire. They're obviously demon-possessed and so on. But that there's this level of evil in the upper echelons that's ruling this world. And so you can imagine if someone like Trump comes along and he starts to mess up the system, they hate him. I mean, anyone who stands up, like South Africa was standing against the New World Order, as was Chile. And you had a few groups. Taiwan was making a strong stand against New World Order. And, of course, they get targeted. Stephen Mitford Goodson had quite a lot to explain behind the scenes of the banksters, the economists. Anyway, there's obviously a moral and spiritual dimension. They don't fear God, number one, and many of them actually hate God. Yeah, indeed. Yes.
I just saw last night, sort of on social media, one said when he's one day going to appear before God, he's going to kill God.
Oh, yeah, well, we'd like to see that. Well, it's like when Obama was making all these threats against Vladimir Putin. I said, you know, you should go back to the days of David and Goliath. Why don't we get heads of state to meet one another in a ring? We'd have to film it so we could slow it down, slow motion replay, and see what actually happened. Because Vladimir Putin would take out a person like Obama in seconds.
Yeah, well, they don't even need to refer to biblical history. We can go to 70 AD where the Jews said, let his blood come upon us and our children. How many were killed in 70 AD? 1.3 to 1.6 million.
Not intelligent to challenge God, yes. Mm. Yeah, well, I think that a lot of these people out there, why do they hate Vladimir Putin, Russia? Not because he used to be in the KGB and used to be a communist. It's because they don't promote the homosexual agenda. They're kicking out the Rothschild banks, and Russia's being run for Russians. So, yes, no wonder they hate them. They didn't mind Russia when Russia was communist, promoting terrorism and all that around the world. But now that Russia's building churches, putting out laws against homosexuality and so on, now suddenly Russia's the biggest threat to the world. Just the same sort of thing they say against us. When South Africa was a Christian country, we were hated from around the world. Of course, they came up with every reason. They invented some pretty good propaganda that was very believable. So why should I believe the same media that lied about us when they talk about someone else? I haven't met Vladimir Putin, but I'm inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt on the basis that the people who hate him are the same people who hate Christ, and they hate, well, they hate us. They hate anyone who's a Christian. I think they hate Russia now because Russia's becoming more Christian. Yes.
So I was wondering about the New World Order. I hear a lot of claims about the New World Order. Obama actually said a few things about him himself, but what exactly is it? And is it already in place?
To some extent, but not perfectly. So we've got some very good films exposing, but I think the gender one is probably the very best intro.